Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to welcome you to the second public forum at ICANN 61 and introduce, I'm proud to introduce, our board chair, Shireen Chalabi.
Thank you, Brad, and welcome everyone back to the second public forum of ICANN 61. For those of you who are new to ICANN, this is our second public forum or open mic session of the week. The first was on Monday. This session will last 2 hours and 45 minutes, and we will take a break about halfway through. I hope you'll take the opportunity to make comments, ask questions, and raise issues that you have worked on or observed during the week we spent here in Puerto Rico. I have a small announcement for those of you joining remotely. We appreciate your patience and understanding as we navigate issues with Adobe Connect. My colleague Martin will later detail how you can submit questions and participate. And please remember, this is not a replacement for public comments that ICANN is seeking on various issues and policies. Using our public comment system is the only way your comments will receive proper consideration from the appropriate committee, supporting organization, and staff members. As I said on Monday, these public forums are very important to us. We need to hear from you. This helps us do a better job. Let me remind you to take advantage of the skilled interpreters we have here supporting us. If you wish, in addition to English, you may ask your question in Spanish, Russian, French, Arabic, Portuguese, and Chinese. With that, I will hand over to our Ombudsman, Herb Wei, to review the expected standards of behavior governing this session. I'd like to note that Herb could not be here today and is joining us via phone from Glass Bay, Nova Scotia. Herb.
Thank you, Shireen. Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everybody. Members of the board, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to begin by apologizing for my hastened departure from ICANN 61 due to a family emergency, and I look forward to catching up with you all at ICANN 62 or maybe before. I would like you to take a moment to look around. You will notice the room is particularly full of two things: people and technology. If everyone at ICANN treated each other with the same care we give the technology in this room, we would not need unexpected standards of behavior. We should be treating each other with respect, naturally, unconsciously, unconditionally, the same way we treat our laptops. It is only by treating each other with respect can we offer true service to the global internet community. By fostering a culture of diversity, tolerance, professionalism, and respect, it's the only way forward. In closing, I would like to remind you all that the person at the other end of your email, posting, or comment is a human being just like you. So please be kind. And finally, when you leave ICANN 61 and return to your daily lives, families, friends, and loved ones, please remember to give them a hug and tell them you love them. Thank you, and I wish you all a very productive public forum.
Thank you very much, Herb, and wishing you well in your situation. Dear all, I would like to give a basic overview that you've heard before. How we engage with each other in this forum. We have about four Q&A sessions, each about half an hour or 45 minutes long. And during these blocks, any questions of community interests are welcome. Now, if you have a question or a comment, I would invite you to start queuing up at the microphone. And what you will find is staff taking a picture of your badge. This is just to make sure that your name is well expressed by the scribes in the script. So, as you're likely aware, the Adobe Connect is not available for this session. But questions are welcome also remotely via the engagement at icann.org email address. If emails come in, questions come in, the public forum producer, Brad White, who is seated there at the front, will read the question out loud. The board facilitator will decide who might best be able to answer this. If we can't answer your question right away, we'll take it away and we'll get back at you with the best possible answer shortly after. So, as a reminder, live interpretation is being offered during this session. And for those joining us remotely, more information is available on the session schedule page. For those in the room, interpretation headsets are available. Now, the rules governing this session. When you speak, speak slowly and clearly. Clearly state your name and state who you are representing, if anyone. Now, the rules of participation, as you know, there's a time limit on questions and comment. You have 2 minutes to ask your question, and that will be enforced by a timer that is projected on the screen behind me. And board responses will also be limited to 2 minutes. Now, one follow-up is allowed, and also limited to 2 minutes. We want to hear as many people as possible, and the timer is really aimed to facilitate that. So with that, and without wasting any other time, I'm going over to the first board facilitator, Avery Doria. Avery?
Thank you, Martin, and welcome, good afternoon. And I'll go to the first person in line, please.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. And thank you for the opportunity to speak here. My name is James Galvin. For identification purposes, I work for Afilias. I'm a member of the technical community. I've been an internet security technologist for over 30 years, well before the internet as we know it today. I'm an active member of the RDS PDP Working Group, and I've been with ESSAC since its inception. In fact, I just recently stepped down as vice chair of ESSAC last December. So something extraordinary happened 2 days ago, and I think it's essential and important that we take a moment to celebrate that. ICANN, the organization, responded to a security incident in an exemplary way. What I want to say starts with David Conrad, ICANN CTO, who participates in ESSAC. And he heard an ESSAC discussion. An ESSAC member identified a security concern with Adobe Connect. It started at about 6 p.m. on Tuesday night. The significance of the issue was immediately recognized. It was immediately escalated. And about 12 hours later, ICANN 61 opened on Wednesday and continued, almost as if nothing had happened. And I want to highlight that again. ICANN staff exemplified in a best-in-class way how to respond to a security incident. Not only that, the problem centered around a technology upon which we depend almost inextricably to conduct our work. And yet 12 hours later, the logistics of this meeting were re-architected and had been deployed. I have no idea how many staff it really took to do this, but I do know that many of them were up all night to ensure that we, in this room, the ICANN community, could continue our work. I do want to call out one person, Ashwin Rangan, ICANN's Chief Innovation and Information Officer, for his leadership with all of the team at ICANN for their honest, decisive, and exemplary handling of this issue. There's a lesson in here for all of us. Thank you again.
Thank you for the comment, and thank you for the technical team for the work they did. And now I'll go on to the second person in line.
Buenas tardes a todos.
Hello everyone, my name is Ul. I'm director on the board of DOT Quebec and co-chair of the governance committee. Like many new GTLD applicants and probably most people in this room, our expectations for total domains under management have not yet been realized. According to namestats.com this morning, only 61 out of 1,226 new GTLD strings have more than 50,000 domains under management. You will recall that 50,000 is a magic number for registry-level transactions related to annual increments of domain registrations, against which the minimum ICANN annual fee of $25,000 applies, before a unit transaction fee of 25 cents applies. This means that just under 5% of registries are currently subject to the minimum. These registries average about 3,318 domains under management, and therefore are paying an average of $7.53 per domain. This is an excessive fee, especially when compared to the actual price charged by registries. Are these registries successful? I'd suggest they are. Success can be measured in different ways, and certainly domains under management is one criteria, but need not be the only criteria. In that context, I ask the board on behalf of all the strings that may never achieve the arbitrary 50,000 transaction threshold that you consider changing the minimum fee to a tiered model that recognizes the broad collection of registries that have significantly less than the current 50,000 threshold. Doing so would create a more level playing field for smaller operators and also create a more attractive environment for new applicants in the new round. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Do I have a reply from anyone at the table? No. Thank you for the comment. I'm sure it will be taken under consideration. I do have an online question, so I'll go over to Brad and then I'll come back to the line. Thank you.
Thank you. We have an online question in Spanish, which my colleague Alexandra Danz will read.
This question is from Alex Antelis. Good morning. Hi, everyone. I noticed that in most working groups during this meeting, there is a common denominator, which is the creation or generation of capabilities. How can we relate ourselves and participate more effectively and in our own language, this capacity building? And when will they be available in the new e-learning of ICANN? Congratulations for the new site. Greetings from the internet community to those present in the meeting.
Thank you for the comment. I was missing the translation at the very beginning, so I'm just reading up on it. Perhaps Sally could help us with an answer to that one in terms of the outreach and the capacity building. Is that possible?
Yaron, can we ask Sally to answer that question, please?
Thank you for the question. We're very well aware of the need to make ICANNLEARN available in as many languages as possible. And indeed, the platform we are now using has greater language capability than we have ever had in the past. As we launch new courses, we will communicate exactly which languages they are available in. And we will make sure, using our existing communications channels, as well as ICANNLEARN itself, that we raise awareness as highly as possible about the range of options. I just wanted to thank the questioner to use this as an opportunity to make that observation, that we recognize that wide language availability is an important criteria for take up, and that was part of our thinking when we were procuring a platform solution. So there'll be a lot more on this in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Go to the next person in line, please.
Thank you, Avery. This is Fred Fellman, and I'm an independent consultant. And I've just had the opportunity to sit through a discussion of the timeline for execution for a tiered access model to who is, in light of GDPR, at the GNSO meeting. And a timetable was placed on the screen, and it was quite worrisome in that it showed a gap between May, which is the date for implementation, and December, the date at which provision for access to non-public data would be provided to security interests, to intellectual property folks who are engaged in protecting consumers, and to law enforcement agencies. And I think we all understand that that is a little bit of a problem. We're in an unprecedented time at ICANN, and we have an unprecedented responsibility to the public interest, as stated in the GDPR. So I would recommend, and I would hope, that the board would consider asking the leadership of ICANN to present the accreditation model that we presented a few days ago on the 23rd, and not ask for a timeline, but propose the model that is already in their hands that we presented them a few days ago. Because a gap between May and December, no matter how hard-hearted you could be, is not an amount of time that the public can sit with a gap of not being protected from the threats that are before them. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris, would you like to take that? Since he's asking the board, not...
I think Becky should actually take it because.
Thank you.
Well, we could just pass we could just pass it around the board until someone's prepared to respond.
So I think the timeline that was put up showed the effective date of the penalties phase of GDPR, which is May 25th, as opposed to the date on which access would be unavailable necessarily. And the point is that the date on which that would happen is still a question of discussions. I think ICANN has indicated pretty clearly that it is in discussions with the data protection authorities in Brussels. It expects to have further discussions the last week of May, that there is some hope that that the DPAs would be able to communicate effectively with respect to their appetite for any kind of delay in the process, and that we will all know much more after those discussions. So I would urge, I think that everybody's to be commended very much on putting together that accreditation proposal quickly, and I know that ICANN is looking at it seriously. I know that it's also part of the mix of things that we certainly expect that the DPAs would have in their toolkit here. It certainly demonstrates commitment on the part of ICANN and the community to move as quickly as possible into a robust accreditation model that we think is useful. But I'm not going to, I think that we need more response from the DPAs in order to move to the next step.
I have two sentences. I asked the question specifically of Akram, and his answer was quite specific that that there was no plan for May to December, and several contracted parties said that they would be turning off access on May 25th to comply. So that question was asked very specifically.
Thank you. Yoram, would you like to follow up?
I think I repeated that several times this week, that if we don't get strong guidance from the DPAs, our ability to enforce our contracts will diminish, because local law always supersedes our contracts, and that will lead to a fragmented who is. And there is very few things I can do about it, or anyone in the board. The other thing is that nothing prevents anyone, which we talked about many times, to actually contact the DPAs directly and send whatever models you have to the DPAs directly for their consultation as well. We are not and will not be sort of a gateway for those as well. And we have helped many of your parts to have direct contacts with the DPAs and the individual DPAs as well as the Article 29. Thank you.
That sounds like a very passive response for the public interest. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. And that was two follow-ups. Next in line, please.
Thank you. It's Claudia Selli, and I'm speaking on behalf of the BC. In our most recent comment on NOMCON, the BC supported process improvements to increase transparency to AECs and ASOs, while also adopting procedures to ensure confidentiality about candidate consideration. The BC recognizes that NOMCON continues to propose process improvements, such as outreach to AECs and ASOs, criteria to reflect skills and experience needed on the board, in-person NOMCOM review of all candidates, improved communication with candidates throughout the process. We have been hearing talks this week about one NOMCOM member disclosing confidential information outside the NOMCOM, which would seem to violate confidentiality and integrity. We understand this incident has been addressed with appropriate measures, and we are always supportive when ICANN shows high standard of conduct by taking integrity and confidentiality seriously. Thank you.
Thank you. Chris, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Avery. Just to say thank you very much for the comment.
Thank you. Next, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Israel Rosas, for the record, speaking on behalf of the Steering Committee of the Youth Coalition on Internet Governance, of which I'm an appointed member, and I'm going to switch to Spanish, so please take your headsets or read the transcript.
Considering this is the first public meeting of ICANN after having been appointed as members of the steering committee since the IGF meeting.
Coming out of the speakers at the back here in English while you're speaking in Spanish, which is quite hard for us to cope with. So can someone from... Sorry? It's the translation. Yeah, we're hearing the translation through the speakers at the back, so... Perhaps somebody from tech could see if they could come and fix that. I apologize for interrupting you.
No problem at all. Well, tomando en cuenta...
Considering this is the first public meeting that ICANN has had since our appointment as members of the executive committee in the IGF meeting in 2017, we want to notice that we will promote and share with the members of the coalition all the efforts now being made in ICANN as an invitation to join your voices to the debate. In this regard, we want to invite any young person joining the coalition, considering that the work of this coalition is part of the activities of the period in between the IGF meetings, and we want to highlight the significance of this involvement. Thank you.
And having watched the work of that coalition, I do encourage people to listen and to indeed get involved, because it is very important and has a great effect. So thank you very much. Next, please.
Good afternoon. My name is John Lepreys. I'm a Neuralo ALAC representative, and I'm speaking today in my own capacity. So, is the board, and specifically the Risk Committee, planning on issuing comments at ICANN 62 regarding the planned KSK rollover scheduled for October? At this meeting, I've heard from ESSAC and David Conrad that while the rollover is important, data on the potential effects of the rollover on service providers who manage resolvers and end users is noisy and does not align with expected models. This represents unquantified risk, and as such, I asked the board to issue comment prior to the scheduled rollover. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me see. Lito, would you try? Oh, Ram. Lito, I'm sorry. Please.
Yes, we have been looking at the data of the probably resolvers that won't work, and we're trying to get more of that data to be ready to in case we have any problem when the KSK rollover happens. So we have been looking, and we are continuously looking at that input to be in the best position we can when the KSK rollover happens. Thank you.
Thank you. Ram, you would like to add?
Thank you. I'd like to add, I'm Ram Mohan. One of the things that the board has planned to do and has given a heads up is to both the ESSAC and the RSAC that it plans to ask them for their commentary and their analysis. And that'll be part of the analysis that the board undergoes before it provides a report and a readout of what's happening. So it's being taken quite seriously, as you noticed. The Office of CTO has a plan. There is a great deal of data that has already been collected. There's a little bit more to be done. The focus of the board is on making sure that there's an appropriate risk management approach taken to this, and that we balance the risk of potential breakage with also the risk of ensuring that we've said we're going to roll the key. This is a cryptographic key, and if we never have the experience, or if we don't have the experience of how to roll the key and understand how to be resilient in light of that, that poses other risks as well. So, but the board is looking into that, and the risk committee is particularly focused on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Shireen, please.
Ram, is it also fair to say that there's no way of de-risking the rollover, right? That it's there will always going to be breakage whenever you roll it. The question is, when is the point in time you do that? And sometimes the risk of not doing it is higher than the risk of doing it itself. So there comes a point where we need to do it, especially when nothing is compromised. Because if you were to roll it when time things are compromised, it gets more difficult. So we have to pick the right time. Thank you for your question.
Thank you. Any other board comments? No. Okay, take the next one at the line, and then I'll be going to online.
Thank you. It's Steve DelBianco with the business constituency, along with Brian Winterfeld of the intellectual property constituency. BC this week really stands for being constructive, because that's what the BC tried to do. We worked alongside the GAC to organize a session in this room on Monday, and our best attempt to give an ICANN's interim model for GDPR compliance. How do we assess it on a community-wide view? We also have many members of the BC and the IPC who came forth this week in terms of being constructive with a proposed accreditation model. And Brian's now going to make a joint IPC-BC request of assistance from the board.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity for us to speak to you together. We thought we'd make it a little interesting at the public forum. Usually it's one by one. We appreciate Joran's offer earlier this week of resources to assist us in putting together, hopefully, an accreditation model that will work for the community, that will work with the interim model. We've affectionately deemed it the cannoli to go along with the calzone, and we know it's very important work. We have asked specifically by email this morning to David Olive and Teresa Swinehart, and we copied Shireen and Joran on the communication. We're hoping to get ICANN org support from a secretariat perspective, as well as ICANN support from the facilitation, technical, and legal support, so we can speedily do our work, knowing that the clock is ticking and that having an accreditation model in place is really important for the entire community. I know Fred spoke earlier about the potential dangers, and we want to have a strong interim model that has an accreditation model in place once things are launched, and we're hoping for board support.
Thank you. I've got Joran and then George, please.
I'm pleased to see you standing there together. So I accept two questions for you, and one question for you. Have you reached out to the other parts of the community and talked to them about this potential accreditation model? Because I think it's important that everybody has the ability to be a part of that. Otherwise, it will just be a BC IPC. You can just say yes, but we haven't received any communication from any other part of the community about this.
Yeah, so Joran, we actually had a very productive meeting yesterday between the CSG and the Contracted Party House. We actually started getting their feedback on the model. They obviously, it was just put out, so they didn't have a lot of time, but they actually had quite helpful feedback that they're already providing that we're looking to incorporate. And I think the goal is absolutely to have participation from all parts of the community so that we can come to you with an accreditation model that has the support of the entire community.
So if anyone from civil society would like, for instance, would like to get involved, they contact either one of you?
Absolutely.
Good. The other thing is that, just to point out, that because it was a previous request as well, going back, we are trying to find a middle way between what's in the policies and what's in the law. And we appreciate all help with that. But we are not the negotiator, and the board will not, and I will not take sides in this, because we have discussions that we will have to bring to the DPAs. With that said, we are not going to lock ourselves into one particular model. What we're going to do is to take that model as well, and we're going to point them in, and we're going to share with you exactly how we do this. But it's not like we're now going to say that this is the ultimate one, because if we are, and we're wrong, we have very few alternatives, and you don't want us to do that. But we will bring in... I think that we need some more guidance from the DPAs before we finally lock down the accreditation model. But with that said... an accreditation model that is coming from the multi-stakeholder model, that was modeled twice, I think it helps us in the dialogue with the DPAs, and I really appreciate it. I don't think it's time right now to go down in all technical details, because that will take time. And I think that everybody wants to avoid that our actions provides more insecurity for the DPAs, because that could lead to, if we wait too long because we want to be too detailed, that could cause a problem for the DPAs to take some of the more fundamental questions going on. And that's a timing balance that we need to do as well. But I'm very happy to support it. I'm very happy to support the discussions between the different parties agreement to come up with the philosophy of models.
Joran, if I may follow up just a moment, please, Aubrey. Joran, the request made by email today was a request for the kind of community conversations and support. So it would be Adobe sessions once we get that working again. And they would include anybody in the community, just like the webinars that you helped us host in January and February. All are welcome. But we learned yesterday that we have a lot more detailed work to do to even be able to answer the basic questions that the contract parties had for us on our initial proposal. We're not asking for an endorsement. We're asking for support, administrative support, to host community-wide conversations. And we don't want to wait for DPAs to answer. We just don't have enough confidence that their answer would be specific enough about accreditation. And we'll take the risk that some of the work we're doing could be throwaway. We'll take that risk, but we need your help to do that.
Thank you. I have George and then Becky.
Could I make one? Oh. I think we have received multiple communications with you, and some of them has been a little bit different in the details what we want to do now. But we're going to work it out together. And for anyone else who's listened to this, take the opportunity to go and Steve and Brian, if you're other parts of the community, and talk to them about working together on an accreditation model. I think you're doing a fantastic job according to the multi-stakeholder model by that invitation, and makes me proud of being an ICANN. Thank you.
Thank you, Joran. Now let me go to George and then Becky.
Thank you, Aubrey. I saw your document yesterday. This is, by the way, a personal opinion. I don't speak for the board. I saw it yesterday, and I think you deserve a lot of credit for getting something on the table that has enough substance and enough detail in it to be able to be used perhaps as a starting point. Maybe it's not an end point, but it's a starting point, and it makes the discussion much more likely to go further, whether people agree with it or disagree with it. So thank you very much to the business community.
Thank you, George. Becky, please.
So also I want to thank and commend the business constituency and the IPC for being constructive and putting together a model and understanding that we're all dealing with this in urgency. I just want to share my personal observations sort of based on all of the conversations over the past week about where we are and the timeline and timing, because I know you guys are feeling this incredible urgency, like we need to get off the block tomorrow. I think what has to happen is that ICANN needs to spend the time in the run-up to the meetings it's having with DPAs in the week of March 26, getting into the best place with the best information that it has in order to make a compelling case to the DPAs that this community is working on this as an urgent problem and is committed to a solution, and that there are significant consequences of not having both clear guidance and some communication about the enforcement position. To me, that if I were a regulator, having been sort of in those shoes, what I would want is a commitment to a robust accreditation, a commitment to real tiered access, and a timeline for getting there in a way that minimizes disruption. I think that timeline, the creation of the timeline, requires some thinking about engineering kinds of issues. And so I think that's the priority now, coupling it with the commitment on robust accreditation. I think the timing on beginning to talk about the specs and the details of the accreditation model will come after that. It's not that far away, but I totally feel your anxiety, but I think let's focus on the next 2 weeks.
Thank you. And now I'll go to the online comment, please.
Jimmy Baxter, .gay LLC writes, first, I'd like to thank and congratulate ICANN's tremendous effort for keeping the remote participation active over the past few days. Bravo. I'd like to take a moment to address something with the board that we feel important to clarify in the larger picture of our ongoing accountability efforts at ICANN. To simplify things, the claim we have before the board is that Dot Gay was treated in a discriminatory manner during CPE in relation to other community applicants, acknowledging that the word discrimination can be a trigger for many. We'd like to be certain that the board is interpreting our use of the word properly. To be absolutely clear, Dot Gay's claim of discriminatory treatment is not related to any belief that ICANN or its representatives are anti-gay or that discrimination has occurred because we are gay. It is, however, directly linked to the promise of non-discrimination for our application according to the ICANN bylaws.
Thank you, Jamie. Chris, would you like to take this one?
Thank you, Avery. Jamie, thank you for the comment and for the clarification. We appreciate it. And I know that you have an outstanding question from Monday's public forum, and you're going to be getting a response to that shortly in an email. Thank you.
Thank you. Go to the next person in line, please. Sorry, excuse me. My apologies. Shireen, please.
I just wanted to reassure Jamie and the entire ICANN community that we have the utmost respect to every community within ICANN, and we have no discrimination against any community. So please be assured of our respect for the gay community. Thank you.
Thank you, Shireen, for that. Now, I have to remember to take a look around the table before I start, so please. Next person in line.
Dear board members, my name is Raul Plummer. I'm from the non-commercial stakeholder group in the GNSO. One of the hottest topics in this meeting have been the declining revenues of ICANN and the resulting budget cuts. Around 11 out of 10 people warned me that questioning the rationale of frozen sustainable income streams is going to make me unpopular, but I've treated every ICANN meeting as my last anyway. The cuts aimed at the community, of course, hurt the civil society the most because we're pretty much the only ones here that don't get paid for our participation here at ICANN. That's why I'm grabbing this mic once again, because the multi-stakeholder model's playing field is becoming more and more uneven. I think there are a lot of people here who've been under the false impression that the revenue coming from the new GTLDs is somehow sustainable. It never was. As far as I know, the only sustainable revenue streams are the annual fees of 25 cents per domain name and the $25,000 for the TLDs. My understanding is that the fee of 25 cents per domain hasn't been raised for at least a decade. The most compelling reason to raise that price is simply inflation. The community is facing big cuts that could be, to a large extent, be offset by a raise of 1 cent per domain and would result to the tune of $3.3 million per year from the 330 million domains in existence. The industry will pass the cost to the registrants, so instead of $9.99, the new price would be $10. ICANN has seen its workload increase dramatically in the last 10 years, and I feel we'd need to reflect that by increasing our sustainable revenue streams. The sales of new GTLDs was convenient, but it always was an extraordinary income and should be treated as such when considering the sustainability and the long-term survival of ICANN. The common answer, in the form of a question to this, was where is raising these prices going to stop? It's been frozen for over 10 years. My question is, when are we going to start talking about our increased workload and inflation?
Thank you. Ron, would you like to take this one?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the question and the sentiment regarding funding estimates and long-term projections on funding for the organization. They are very important, and we've certainly heard a lot of concerns with respect to funding and, of course, our expenditures. I think it's imperative on us, not just a board, not just the organization, but us as a community, to realize that fiduciary responsibility is something we all need to own, and we need to be very intentional and deliberate about what we prioritize and what work we do before other work. And, you know, we can't do everything. I think this has been a theme that we've heard throughout the week. But back to your question of pricing and what process can we put in place to reconsider other pricing models? This is something that's typically a community-driven process, not a board top-down driven process, but I would like to defer to Joran to comment on how the community can move forward with any pricing questions or concerns.
I mean, when there is no discussion whatsoever within the board or in the org to raise prices. The discussions around future policies changing belongs in the community, and that's something that is there. But let me point to something else. During this week, and this has been, for me personally, a fantastic ICANN week again, because we always start out somewhere and we end up in a different place. One of the things that has been discussed several times is the sort of 85-15%, where the budget I propose is only mostly about the 15%. During this week, during several sessions, there have been discussions about the 85%, which we have to have in a dialogue between the board, the community, and the org. So now, for instance, we talk about the cadence of reviews, the timing of reviews, even length of meetings, even if I know that you all would like to have had one more day to this meeting, and the amount of sessions during meetings. Suddenly something that we didn't talk about 3 months ago is now on the table. I think it's important to go back and look on those things, and I will definitely take on myself to give you suggestions, ideas, and even proposals for you to react on, so we can look into what is really the prioritization of the costs we're having, because that's the discussion we want to have. And also to put on record, one of the things that comes up is that we probably need to change the cadence of the discussion as well. We're doing we're almost like a company when we do the budget discussions. And to have a two-year budget cycle instead, where we have time to have those discussions within the community, that I think is important. So even if I take your notion about increasing funding, we use the word funding to emphasize the fact that we are not a company. This is funding for something. And that is, I'm very happy, again, about being part of the ICANN discussion about this. So we will come back, and I bet that you will continue to ask questions about this, and I'm looking forward to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Shireen and then George, who both wish to comment.
Thank you, Avery, and thank you for the question. Over the last 10 years, our funding has increased and our expenses increased almost equally. And if you think about it, there's absolutely no reason to do that. We have reached a point where it doesn't matter whether our funding increase or decrease, we have to have the right size for our cost base. So that, in fact, we always should have our cost base less than our funding. And the funding, the cost base must not increase all the time. There is no reason. The most important thing is, what is it that we need to do to deliver on our mission and to service our community? But that doesn't mean that every year we have to increase our cost base by 16%. There's no real reason for doing that. And we've done it. We've done it in the past, but now we need to really think going forward that we have to have the appropriate cost base to match our mission, which is the secure and stable operation of the identifier system. So please, when you talk about fee increase and all of that, don't assume that automatically fee increases, that the cost will also increase. We have to come to a cost base that makes sense to all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Shireen. George?
Thank you. This is a complex subject in the analysis of expenses and the issue of inflation, the issue of additional functions that are being put on the on ICANN org as a result of increase in size need more analysis than we're going to give it here. And Joran is absolutely right that this question belongs in the community. By intervening at the mic, you have made it visible within the community. Thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Raul. Okay, I'll go to the next online, next people in line, and then I'll go to online.
My name is Mona Saweh, a fellow from Egypt. May I ask the ICANN 61 fellows to stand, please? We are 53 people from 44 different countries. We're presenting these two comments on behalf of the ICANN 61 fellows. To illustrate the engagement of former fellows continue here in ICANN, may I now ask all former ICANN fellows with us here to also stand. From volunteers to board members, all are active participants. ICANN fellows are committed to the concept of one world, one internet. Please be seated. Thank you. I'm here to ask the board to define the fellowship as a discrete program with stated goals, metrics, and its own budget. Currently, the fellowship program appears at the travel line item in the FY19 budget. The board should empower the fellowship to serve ICANN's mission by creating a diverse pipeline of engaged and informed participants from every corner of the globe. Genuine engagement can rarely be built without face-to-face intensive newcomer learning experiences. We ask you to operationalize success metrics, harmonize them with the organization's strategic vision, and allow it to reach its full potential. We also ask consistencies to utilize the crop of talent and enthusiasm fellow offers. The fellowship program is facing a 50% reduction, both in budget and participation, from 60 to 30 fellows. The purpose of these cuts is difficult to understand. The fellowship is not only a program, it's a flagship. It encompasses the very essence of ICANN as laid out in its mission statement and core values. It's a global, multi-stakeholder, and culturally diverse. It goes beyond the borders, profession, and constituencies. It transcends age, rationality, and gender.
Thank you. You're going to... Right. This is too, you're going to continue on as before. Okay. So, thank you.
My name is Kasek Galgal. I'm a coach with the fellowship program. I also happen to be the only Papua New Guinean at ICANN 61. As the rest of the internet governance ecosystem is ramping up the fellowship programs from ISOC to IRRs, ICANN is downsizing theirs. We are deeply concerned that ICANN's cuts will negatively affect its diversity and ability to engage underserved communities, which experience much tougher limitations and demands. Constituents who live on other side of the digital divide come here primarily through the fellowship. Many good and innovative ideas, including business and economic perspectives, have and will frequently come from them. The fellowship is at its core an engagement program. A positive byproduct of it has been the incredible rise of several fellows to the upper levels of ICANN's leadership. However, that metric should not be the only one. A detailed plan of how the fellowship utilizes the reduced budget should be based on yearly reviews, sustained by clear metrics built on the stated goals of the program, compounded data over time, measuring return on investment in a way that takes into consideration more than just leadership numbers. Therefore, operating on a measured budget should not mean cutting wholesale. Rather, austere times can be a perfect moment to evaluate what is excessive and what can be done more efficiently to serve ICANN's mission. We are fortunate to have been part of a rigorous and informative program that fast-tracks local and global engagement with ICANN. The incredible and dedicated professional staff running the program, the fellowship program, makes us feel welcome, allow us to express our thoughts and ideas in order to blossom into informed and engaged participants. The fellows are the face of the ICANN Global. In closing, I ask you to let the fellowship program manage itself into its full potential as a crucial part of the ICANN family and internet governance community. Free the fellowship from being a travel line item. Allow it to be its own program with its own budget and its own metrics. Watch it and ICANN grow, thrive together. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Shireen, would you care to respond to it? Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you very much for both points put forward, and also very much for the show of hands and everybody standing up. That was a very powerful message, I have to admit. So I want to make a couple of comments. First of all, these are not austere times, right? And the fact that funding is appear to be leveling, that doesn't mean that we should panic or we should worry tremendously. ICANN remains funded solidly. The question here is that how effective should be in our spending, how, for example, the fellowship program should be made sustainable and strong and deliver its results. So I do understand the concerns when you see 50% cuts, and there's been cuts in other programs as well affecting the communities. And I think I've said this in my opening remarks, that we are, the board, my colleagues here, we are very cognizant of all of these concerns, right? And we are going to take all the comments, including those, into account when the draft budget is being revisited and adjusted, for taking into account all the concerns. The aim here is not only to strike the right balance between fiscal responsibility and other things, but also to make sure that this community, which is mostly made of volunteers, can participate effectively in ICANN. I also hear you, and we hear you very clearly, to take off the fellowship program from being a travel line item into a program in itself with its own metrics and with its own goals and stated goals. So that's a very good suggestion. We will take that into account. So we heard you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. At this point, I'd like to go to an online comment, please.
We have a comment in French, which again, my colleague Alexandra Danz will read.
My name is Betty Foster, and I participate for the first time as a fellow because of Aberdeen Daniel. I come from Guadeloupe in the Caribbean. I run a software business, and I'm also president of an association with 100 players that come from the digital side and the communication side. I'm also a teacher at the university. I really appreciate that ICANN lets me speak in French, and I am now in an absolutely different space. It's going to help me on a professional level. I will absolutely inform the board of my university on the subject. I hope that the diversity of the region and the language will be maintained in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. One of our French speaking like to take an answer, a comment. Shireen, please.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you, Shireen Chalabi. Thank you so much. I mentioned earlier that we allow the contribution within ICANN with six languages: French, Russian, Portuguese, Chinese, Arabic, and English and Spanish. No. So I think we will be following along these lines, and I hope that it will help everybody in their future communication. Thank you.
Before we move on, this is the end of block one, and I'm going to pass it on to my colleague, Khaled Kouba. But I also want to thank you all for my very first time at facilitating and the great conversations that develop. Khaled, please, to you.
Thank you, Avri, and I can assure you, you did it well. Thank you. Next in line, please.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Mason Cole. I wanted to follow up on the joint BC and IPC comments that were brought to you just a few moments ago. I just returned from a meeting with staff and contracted parties where we proposed incorporating the recently published Who Is Access accreditation model to be put before the DPAs, and where I believe we heard from JJ that this could be accommodated. Assuming this model moves forward, can we get the same commitment from the board so that Who Is doesn't go dark and we can make the May deadline?
Thank you. And instead of repeating my comments earlier, I will add something on. We now seem to be concentrating on one subject, the accreditation, as if everything else is sort of done. It's not. We don't have a clear guidance. We have thoughts which we have received from the DPA so far to have a tiered access model. We still have not, to the ultimate extent, actually defined what's going to be inside that model. We have proposed that. We have not decided, because we're still waiting for more information, what is going to be on the outside of the model as well, on the outside of the gate, so to speak. So the accreditation model, we have to set this into, it's very important we keep in mind, there are some fundamentals in the WHO, in the GDPR discussion, we have to really lock down together with the DPAs, and then it's an accreditation model. So it's not like now we're going to focus on the accreditation model. And if you go back and look at what's on the outside or the inside of the model we have proposed, there are many different views inside the community about those as well. And then there's emails, what kind of information, and so on. And we have to make sure that we don't lose sight to think that if we just agree on an accreditation model, everything is going to be correct. We still have the fundamental things about what's going to be a tiered access model, what's going to be on the outside of that model, what's going to be on the inside of the model, what kind of information can we collect, how is that information moved between the registrar and registries, how are we going to see that in the terms of, for instance, the retention and all those things. So I agree, I have nothing more to say than I said before about it, just not forget the fundamental basis of it first. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Joran. I mean, can we get a commitment put forth on the accreditation model? There is one put before you now.
I think we answered this question several times. And to do the shortcut again, if the community comes up, the whole community comes up with an accreditation model, we would be proud to talk to the DPAs about that. You still have the ability to talk to the DPAs yourself with your DPAs in individual countries or the Article 29 groups. We don't stop you from that. We are trying to take the fundamental questions to the DPAs so we can all answer it. Accreditation is one important part of it, but it's not the full part. We are not negotiating. We are trying to get as many answers we can from the DPAs in a very important question. And what we do is that you've seen that with the help of the community, we've crossed a hybrid model where there are differences within the community. We have already, as you can see, pointed them to the paper. We will after this week, with all the information and the input we have, we will put that into the paper as well. Many of those things we don't have an answer to, and we don't have them until the DPS has told us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mason. Farzana, please.
Hi, my name is Farzan Abadi, Chair of Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group. I have two comments. One is positive and the other critical. To be nice, I read the positive note first. So NCUC had a policy writing course this week, and it was a true capacity building exercise. We thank you for the opportunity, and also we hope that the rest of the community benefits from it as well. The second point. We would like to raise concerns about the conduct of NOMCOM leadership. They have been changing the operating procedures on a whim, diluting the role of non-voting members in the process. It has claimed confidentiality about every aspect of the operation of NOMCOM, while the operating procedure mentions that it has to operate transparently, and the confidentiality only applies to the deliberation about the candidates. Thank you.
Thank you, Farzana. Chris?
Of course, I won't.
Thank you. Just to say that you might want to, the nominating committee is currently being independently reviewed, and you might want to provide that feedback to the reviewers, but thanks, Fazni.
Please.
Thanks. My name is Jordan Carter.nz. I come from CCNSO land, more or less. This is a kind of comment about the budget and the focus that you, Shireen, and you, Joran, put in your opening speeches on the need to address the funding issue, and that we need to be talking about priorities. I endorse and welcome that. I thought they were a really good way to start the community having this conversation. I wanted to make two specific points about that. One is about the 85%, 15% thing. On the planned FY19 numbers, the 85% is about $117 million. If we need to drive cost savings, we have to do it in the $117 million. We're not going to get the answers from the 15%, the $20 million that's left over afterwards. So I think my encouragement would be to the board to really work with the CEO and look at where you can drive cost savings in the ongoing operations. I know some of that is presented in this year's budget. With an organization like this that's grown so fast, so quickly, I'm absolutely confident there's more ways you can find value for money, so I encourage you to keep that pressure up. The other point is about the enormous lift in staff spending over the three budgets from 17, 18, 19. It's gone up, as far as I can reckon, about 33% in 3 years. That is a very big increase in staff costs, and staff costs are now getting close to $80 million in the coming year. It's a lot of money. So what I would urge you and plead with you to do is tell the story about that increase. The summary document has the numbers, and it has a graph of headcount for the last few years, and that's it. And if I have to dig much deeper to get the top-line story about what the driver is there, I think that's a problem of presentation. So it might be the globalization strategy that we didn't cost before we adopted it. It might be all sorts of things. Please tell the story carefully, or the budget's going to run into heavy water. Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan. Joran?
On the first point, Shireen will, the board will give me an instruction to look through and give proposals for the community about reviews, cadence, and all of those facts in the 85%. I think I can openly commit to that.
Yes.
Now. Thank you, Shireen. The other part. When you say increase in staff, the staff, we don't sit around in our office. It's actually, FY19 is sort of a perfect storm, which we try. Communication exists when the receiver understands what you say. And we have tried to add more information to this year's budget. If we've succeeded, if you can't read it, I'm sorry for that, and we'll improve the next time. But I can say that when I say, look at the FY19, there's a couple of things that comes in. One of them are previous decisions made by the community. For instance, the accountability measures that, for instance, comes out of transition. We went from 60 pages in the bylaws to 350 pages, including new accountability measures. And I don't judge on this, I'm just saying. And some of those things will cost money because we have to add on people. We have and I'm not pointing at them, but things like customer standing committee. We have a board for PTI. We have to have legal for that, and auditors. The other thing we can also say that the new DT program sort of meant that we went from 200 contracted parties, I wasn't born then, to 2,200 or something. Which means that we have an increase in GDD, we have an increase in compliance because of the volume of that. And this time, I would say FY19 is the year that we actually added on a lot of cost. I sit here, and you should scrutinize us, and we should be able to give you more information about it. But let's come back and talk about the projects that are decided, and we can talk about them instead of saying it's personnel against outreach. That, I think, would be a much more sensible. So thank you, Jordan, for giving me the opportunity to say this.
Can I just follow up? That's the storytelling we need to see in the documents as well as here. So thank you for that.
But I can say that this year, because of less funding, we've saved between $6 to $8 million internally. And in the budget next year, we have savings internally for about $8.6 million, which is about 6% of the budget. We increased the travel support for about 12% for the community, and we decrease it for staff with about 12% as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Joran. Stephanie, please, before we go to you, we would like to have the online question.
Phil Buckingham, CEO, Dot Advice, a GTLD financial advisor, has two questions. Question one, may I first thank Xavier, ICANN CFO, and his team in their huge effort and the time they expended in putting together the 6 documents on the draft FY19 operating plan and budget introductions and highlights. It runs to hundreds of pages. My company has been tracking the registrations of every TLD on a monthly basis and of the whole GTLD marketplace since the first TLD was launched by Donuts in October 2013. May I suggest currently ICANN's FY19 budgeted review top line worst case scenario, which has been heavily downgraded from FY18 actuals, is still very, very optimistic and needs to be reduced further. There may be one saving grace. Google has finally announced the launch of .app this month. They purchased the TLD in ICANN's auction for $25 million over 3 years ago. Has the ICANN financial team factored this launch into fiscal year 19 budgets? Also, personally, I find it hugely disappointing that after more than 6 years after application, that potential four very lucrative revenue streams for ICANN, namely .web, .music, .hotel, and indeed .amazon, are still unresolved and in dispute and not able to launch. ICANN has shot itself in its foot. Question two. As I understand it, the board wishes to top up the reserve shortfall of $5 million by raiding the auction funds, which currently stand at $240 million. I totally agree with this approach. In fact, I would propose ICANN raid it by the further $63 million required. However, I thought the auction fund is ring-fenced, and this approach not allowed, and a bylaw change would be required. Is this still the case?
Thank you, Brad. Joran?
Okay, so there were several points raised. Maybe I'll take them in reverse. Certainly there is a ring fence around the auction proceeds, and that process is still underway. And I'm sorry, I was hearing some shouting from the audience. I couldn't understand it. Come to the mic if you would, please.
I think Sebastian is suggesting that you should tell everybody who you are, Ron.
I'm Ron De Silva. Now I've lost my train of thought. It worked well. So yes, ring fence around the auction proceeds. I had that. I was trying to remember what the other two points were now. Can somebody help me out here? Thank you, Shireen.
Well, I'm going to address the question on the reserve fund. We have issued a first consultation paper before Christmas last year, asking the community what should be the right level for the reserve fund. There were many comments, and the response at the end, the average response, or the one we thought is the one that reflects the community's thoughts in general, is that it should be a minimum of 12 months. We then passed a resolution to that effect. Then we issued a second consultation paper shortly before coming to San Juan, where we said, well, given that decision, it means that the reserve fund ought to be at 138 million. But given the level it is today, that leaves a shortfall of 68. And we put something for the community to consider in terms of a replenishment strategy. And we said, out of this 38 million, the 68 million, there should be some principles that we should follow and some guidance and some objectives. And we said, here are the principles. The first one is, we cannot ask any money from any sources before we ask ICANN.org to make some savings to fund the reserve fund. And we did say in the document that future adopted budget will have to be such that ICANN.org finds savings so that these savings automatically feed into the reserve fund. So they have to also make their contribution. And we said that that will be to the tune of about 3 million a year, i.e. 15 million. We then, the next source of filling the reserve fund was what do we do with the 36 million that was spent on the transition? And those 36 million came from the reserve fund. We did put an idea forward for consideration by the community that perhaps the auction proceeds ought to make that contribution to the reserve fund. If you add these two numbers and you extract them from the original number, that leaves 17 million remaining to be found. And we left various options for the community to consider, including taking money out of the new GTLD remaining money, or go back to ICANN.org for more, or go back to the auction proceeds for more. One thing we did say is that we are not going to ask the contracted parties to raise any money and make a contribution to this. So, yes, the money is ring-fenced, and we did this deliberately so that it's not mingled with any other operational money or any other funds that ICANN has. Thank you.
Can I have Ron answer?
Nouvel intervenant, je voudrais répondre à la deuxième partie de la réponse, de la question. Ron de Silva, micro. Oui, en fait, en ce concernant les suppositions, les présupposés, on a présupposé que les fonds qui étaient considérés comme étant des fonds de réserve. Et
fairly close to our assumptions in the past, so definitely appreciate that input. And then I think there was another topic about some remaining strings in the new GTLD round, and that's probably best for Chris to answer.
Thanks, Ron. Actually, just on the question in respect to DOT app, which you've just touched on, what we do is take into account the fixed fee that is payable by each of the each of the TLDs. What we don't do is factor in possible future sales in the sense of, gosh, this is going to be a good one, therefore we better lob in a huge amount of money. And on the auction proceeds, the answer is yes, the auction proceeds are still ring-fenced. And I think that pretty much covers everything that was in the question. Thanks, Khaled.
Thank you, Steve. Stephanie, please.
Thanks very much. Stephanie Perrin from the Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group. I wish you could stop the clock while I offer a few mots de politesse, because I don't want anyone to take this question as an attack on the board. Just take it as an honest, if somewhat naive, question from a slow learner. I have been wondering since I arrived at ICANN 5 years ago on the EWG, why an organization so full of smart, capable people that is well-run would leave GDPR compliance to the last minute. And yes, even 5 years ago, we knew it was coming. Nobody was paying attention. That perception, or that question, has become even more acute over the past year, and I've been working away on the policy development committee that is looking at the who is policy, trying in good faith to have an influence. And finally it dawned on me over the past 2 days as I attended the meetings where the GDPR SWAT team was basically negotiating the interim solution with the contracted parties and the business community. This would be a negotiation in which civil society is not really participating in the same way as we do in the PDP. We've got 56 members in the PDP. And I've resigned from the PDP because it's my perception. I finally got the light finally came on in there. Obviously, if the board has the ability to impose an interim policy as an emergency measure, why would you get going on GDPR in a multi-stakeholder environment? Because the policy will stick. Every who is policy that has ever come in as an interim measure has stuck. And I'm not optimistic that we'll be able to change it afterwards in the PDP. So I just wondered if you could comment on that. And please don't interpret this as an attack on you. It's just a stupid question.
Sorry, Stephanie, and I apologize. Can I just ask you to be very specifically tell me what the question actually is?
Well, the question is the reason that the ICANN as an organization has not addressed GDPR
over all the years, particularly, remember, there's companies represented here who've been busy doing GDPR for the past 4 years. It takes a while. If the answer to that is that the multi-stakeholder process ends in tedious headbutting, and we know it does, then the quick way to do it is to leave it to the last minute and impose an interim policy from the board, which doesn't have people like me on it, because we can be difficult. We know that. Is that clear enough?
Yaron, could you please?
They just called me by my informal nickname, so I didn't get it was me. You're right. We were late. Terribly late. How do we avoid that? How do we make sure that this community actually understands the implications of laws that is discussed in parliaments around the world? How do we get that? GDPR is really the first, my understanding, the first law that has a direct effect on our ability to make policy. It is. It is that. We can debate it, we may not like it, but that's the way it is. And we see when we meet governments and other ones and speak especially to members of our the community around the world, that there will be other ones. Because there are many countries right now who discuss varieties of GDPR, e-privacy, and we see them. So, and I don't have a simple answer to how to do this. So, but I'm going to do something anyway. So one of the things we're trying to do right now is to assemble legislative proposals that has an effect in the privacy space on our ability to do policies. We are assembling that, and in the next month or two, we will send that information out. We are not a political organization. We don't interfere in the political process, but for you and the community to know what the trends are when it comes to legislative proposals, so we can maybe avoid. The other thing that we're trying to do is to engage more and more in conversations with you, because I'm starting to think that we have to be in the room, sort of, when legislative proposals are discussed. That means that we have to figure out a way, from a non-political perspective, if there are things that can have an effect, we should at least tell. If there's a new legislation, it could break the internet because the wording is bad. We should at least have the opportunity to say that. So these are two of the thoughts that we're now having. We have not 100% done how to do it. We have to think about it and then come back in a dialogue with you. Maybe in Panama we can have a discussion how we can do this in a transparent, open, non-political way, and how we can proceed from here. Thank you very much.
Can I respond to his question, which was, how do we do that?
Sure.
Well, you have to have civil society in the room when you're doing these interim things, because we're the ones that have been fighting to protect human rights around the world in legislation. We understand the legislation quite well, so let us come in and try to act in good faith in this drafting of the interim policy. We do appreciate the full transparency. I really do. I mean this sincerely. But transparency is not participation. We want participation too. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. Can I have Becky as well to comment on that?
I'm just going to be brief. Like, I never disagree with Joran. But I think there's something important. I think that the monitoring legislation and understanding how it impacts the policy development that we're doing here is critical. The contribution that will make is hopefully it will focus the minds in the policy area earlier than otherwise, because there is nothing like a deadline, and usually it has to be a pretty imminent deadline to focus the mind. Having said that, I just want to go back to what Joran said when he started this. Yeah, we should have started this earlier as just as a compliance issue, we should have started it earlier. And just to cut the community a little bit of break in terms of focus, we were sort of engaged in that big transition problem that kind of sucked the air out of the space. So not an excuse, we should have started earlier.
Thank you, Becky. Michele, please.
Good afternoon, Michele Nayland speaking in my personal capacity as ever. Just a couple of things, more kind of comments than specific questions, but I do have a couple of questions as well. Unfortunately, this has become the GDPR meeting. Everything we do is GDPR every day, all day. So I'm unfortunately have to touch on that briefly. The accreditation model has been shown to the contracted parties. We did have a meeting with the commercial stakeholder group yesterday, but that doesn't mean that we endorse it. It doesn't mean that we've had a chance to really dig into it, nor have we had a chance to see any updated, changed, or modified version of the accreditation model that's being proposed. So while I personally have no issue with anybody sending documents to DPAs and talking to DPAs, I would err on the side of caution that anything be presented as being something on behalf of the ICANN community when in reality at present what is there is something from one segment of the community, and that segment of the community is not subject to the fines under GDPR. They're not exposed to that issue. Maybe we can work with them in the future, I think, as something that has been discussed in meetings earlier today, but what is there at the moment is not something that we have negotiated with them. Secondly, with respect to the budget, some people are concerned about cuts to the budget, and I know that Shireen and Joran have both spoken at great length about this kind of balancing act. And I am reassured that fees are not going to be raised. This has been said more than once, specifically in relation to the reserve. Just to make people aware that if the fees are raised by 1 or 2 cents, that has to go somewhere else, which means we as registrars and registries will end up passing it on to our clients. We will end up having it will have an impact on many more people than those who turn up at ICANN meetings. And I would have just one question for you. Could you please provide a detailed rationale as to where the fee structure that is being proposed for proxy and privacy accreditation is coming from? Because it is clear from the conversations we've had with ICANN Compliance this week that there is no impact on their headcount, there is no impact on the number of complaints that they're processing, nor do they have any plans to increase their headcount. Yet the fees that are being proposed would have a detrimental impact on those of us who are smaller operators. Thank you.
Thank you, Michele. Please, I would like to announce that the queue will be closed after the gentleman because we need to go to a pause in a few minutes. And I will ask Joran, please, to comment or answer.
Thank you for the question, Michele. It's a fairly detailed question in some sense, and I rather come back to it. We have to continue the discussion about compliance as such and how we do it. And Jamie is doing an awesome job trying to make it more transparent. Also together with the DAR project, how we can interact. And you and I have had personally several conversations about how we can improve this. I'd rather come back and continue the discussion about compliance as a whole. It's a very important function for ICANN. It's a part of our DNA because it's a part of our the support of the policy set by the community. But with that said, we can always improve. Thank you.
Thank you. Brad, I understand we have an online question.
Aaron Pace writes, "Hello, everyone. My name is Aaron Pace, founder of .less website domains. I am a telecommunications engineer who has developed the innovation ICANN needs for the GTLD program to be successful. As we all know, and as you have seen, the 2012 extensions have not provided any real innovations to improve the internet across the board. Further, they are simply not producing any extraordinary numbers through sales or consumer use. .less website extensions is everything ICANN is looking for. My concern today is that I heard something about the next round being delayed until 2022. My colleagues and I find that unacceptable. If you are not familiar with the features and benefits of .less website extensions, I invite you to check out the website advertisingstandards.org. There you will find the true innovation that is worth talking about. There should not be a delay in the ICANN process to develop true innovation."
Who can comment on that? Thank you. Please.
Hello, my name is Lori Schulman. I am the representative for the International Trademark Association, and I'm a member of the IPC. I want to thank the board, and particularly Javier, who's not a board member, but an officer of ICANN, for really digging down and asking hard questions about the budget. We think it's long overdue, and we really appreciate the efforts you've made, particularly with the reserves issue. But on that note, and on that note, I would like to make a request. It has come to our attention in the budgeting process and where to allocate pain and making cuts, that there are some nonprofit organizations like ICANN Wiki, for example, which offers a lot of good spirit and goodwill to the community, where that budget is being considered to be cut all at once, rather than have the support tapered over a period of time. So what I would ask the board, and particularly the finance committee, to consider is that when you're making cuts to nonprofit organizations that are supported by ICANN, not to make drastic cuts if your contribution is more than 50% of their budget. They will need time to make up the funds. So while we support fiscal responsibility and we do support the cuts, we do ask that you consider tapering them in a way that would allow these nonprofit organizations to survive. Thank you.
Thank you. I will add my personal thank to Xavier, and I will pass it to Joran to answer.
Thank you. I take all the cuts questions.
Oh, okay. So will you consider that, Mr. President, CEO?
That sounded like a song somewhere. When it comes to, on the 150 plus comments we have received, many of them has been about this particular issue. This has been a dialogue that we've had with that entity for a long, long time. There's been a long time which we said we're going to phase out some of the funding for them. There's been a long time discussing about alternative funding models. And we will, as Shireen always says, we will take all your comments into account for the next round. And hopefully then next time we do this, we can have a dialogue instead of throwing things at each other by having a two-year process. But I give you this. You are representative of many different interest groups and organizations in this room. I would say, please go out and talk to them and submit and help them with their funding as well. In this room right now, there are many different organizations who can help. And let's continue the dialogue over this as well. But for their sake, as well as mine, let's help them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I would just like to respond that INTA is a sponsor of ICANN Wiki.
I actually know that.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. We have another online question before the gentleman. Thank you.
Thomas McBride, domain name registrant, writes, as part of the public consultation on replenishment of the reserve fund, one principle states the following. Over the five-year period, the ICANN org should plan for operational savings in order to make a contribution of $15 million U.S. in total in line with principle two. Does that mean that at the end of the five-year period, the ICANN budget figure will drop by $15 million as well? So instead of $140 million per year, it will be $125 million per year. If not, why doesn't ICANN consider lowering its overall spending to lower the budget to help close the gap? Thank you.
Shireen, please.
Thank you for the question. Two things. What we said in the consultation paper is that ICANN org should find 3 million savings per year over the next 5 years, so adding up to a total of 15 million. That doesn't mean that the cost automatically drops to $15 million at the end of that. It means that every year there's a contribution of $3 million. The more important thing, we said that even after that, going forward, we should really aim at having our expenses always less than our funding. We should optimize the size of our operation in order to deliver to the mission. And we should not automatically increase our cost of operation just because funding increases. So we have to find a way of continuously keeping the size of the operation just correct for the business and for the mission we're trying to deliver. Thank you.
Thank you, Shireen. Please.
Hi, my name is Dustin Phillips, and I'm the co-executive director of ICANWiki. I just want to start off by thanking you guys at ICANWiki for supporting us and allowing us to provide our service to the community thus far, and we've done so cost-effectively and with love. Now, we were disappointed to learn that ICANN intends to remove ICANWiki entirely from its budget. Despite the alignment of our missions, the amount of community support, and the concrete results that we've demonstrated in our reports that we've submitted to ICANN. Now, the value of ICANWiki was demonstrated in the outpouring of support in the public comments for the FY19 budget. And first, they said that ICANWiki lowers the barriers to becoming active in ICANN policy development, and that the value of a trusted neutral resource that lays out industry fundamentals in a user-friendly way and is independent of the ICANN organization cannot be highlighted enough. Now, second, they also said that at ICANN meetings, ICANWiki engages the community and contributes to well-informed participation, and that our outreach activities bring stakeholders together to build a stronger community. Third, they said that ICANWiki provides outreach, capacity development, and localized content that is spread across all the regions and is even embedded in ICANN organization strategy. For example, we've been recognized and included in the LAC strategy renewal for 2018 through 2020. And clearly, this project means a lot to the community, including us at ICANWiki. The complete withdrawal of the funding from ICANN threatens the viability of the project, as well as a loss of the valuable time and resources that the community has invested over the years. I'd just like to end on a quotation that I think captures the essence of the public comments. Ultimately, the loss of ICANWiki would be a loss to our overall sense of community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We take note of your comment, and we appreciate that. I would appreciate we will be having a 15-minute break, so please go ahead for 15 minutes exactly, and we will return by 15:25. Thank you so much.
Computer crashed and I wasn't listening.
You crashed?
Well, it's gone into a loop. Where is Eric?